Hello, this is Claire from Comixology, and today Matt and I are speaking with Gilbert Hernandez. Jaime and Gilbert Hernandez series Love and Rockets is one of the most beloved indie serials of all time, and in its 30 years of publication, the prolific Gilbert in particular has outdone himself repeatedly, casting characters from his soap opera Palomar in children's books, gruesome graphic novels about imaginary exploitation movies, and more. This movement away from the core Palomar melodrama seems to represent a real desire in the artist to fly the coop, and his new book Julio's Day is both dramatically different from his past work in many ways, and also arguably his most accomplished work to date. Enjoy. The last time we had you on, Gilbert, it was for the release of the latest volume of Love and Rockets New Stories, and I'm going to try really hard not to be too redundant here, but at the time, we probably had to say something along the lines of the new book being a giant breakthrough for you as an artist and for comics in general, and I am going to have to say that again. Everybody who has put their hands on Julio's Day is like, it seems to feel really revolutionary for the graphic novel, and it's a story with a really interesting structure. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you originally conceived of this story.
I wanted to do a Palomar-type story without the magic realism, so to speak. A straightforward story about a man's life and several characters around him. In the most, naturalistic way I could possibly do it without any interference with ghosts and gangsters and that type of thing, what I normally do. Some of that stuff crept in, of course, later on as I was working on it. But that wasn't my intention. It was mostly to be a straightforward narrative of simply a man's life from the day he was born and till the day he died in a span of 100 years.
Yeah, you began, you started it, serializing it in installments in Love and Rockets, and then you've completed the story uniquely for this novel. Did you know from the beginning that you were going to use 100 pages to tell a 100-year story?
Yeah, that was a plan from the beginning. I just thought that would just be a good starting point, just because I figured, 100 pages is roughly the length of a, short graphic novel. and I thought, and at the time, that was only in the second volume of Love and Rockets when we were still serializing a lot of our stories, so I figured if I serialize it for a few issues, I'll have the book ready. But as it turned out, that I just started working on other stories that needed to be told first, and the Julio's Day stories got shorter and shorter in the book. Like some issues only one page. But I just knew that this was something that had to wait. That I needed to tell these other stories first, simply as an artist. I just wanted to tell those stories, and I knew Julio's Day was going to take a while to do, and eventually, be collected. That was the plan. After a while, when it fell short of 100 pages, so I added 10 pages to the collection, which I'm really happy about because I had time to look back at what I had been missing, what I had missed in the earlier serialized version, and it came together. And it's one of the very few books, or collections, or anything I've ever done that I'm pretty happy with all the way through.
Did you find it otherwise difficult to edit for just that length and maintain the correct rhythm and tone? I mean, it sounds challenging to me.
Actually, that's the easy part. I don't have any technical expertise in timing or rhythm flows, that sort of thing. It all comes natural to me. I'll look at what's missing and I'll just give it the same flow that preceding pages and the pages that come after it do. That it'll just keep on that. That part is actually the very easiest thing to do in comics for me.
For something that, as you say, is a relatively short length for a graphic novel, it has this monumental resonance, I think, because it encapsulates one whole century. It has one of the virtues of Palomar, which is You know, you're very famous for letting your characters age naturally, and especially across several generations of a family. But Julio's Day doesn't just center on one man's life cycle. You also show the life cycle, you know, 100 years of an American, you know, passage of time with economic collapses and assassinations and wars. But you do it without almost ever showing these events explicitly. They sort of haunt the characters like rumors or grotesque evidence of them will arrive without ever really being explicit about it. What was your motivation for leaving out these catastrophes?
I didn't want to get on any political side, really. I just wanted it to be told from the point of view of someone who doesn't know what's going on, basically, and who's affected by these things, but not necessarily involved. If somebody goes to war, they go away to war. You don't see what happens when they're there. I mean, I've done stories like that, but this time I just really wanted to have it from the point of view, in the simplest point of view, of simply characters who just don't know what's going on but are affected by it anyway. They have no idea what the stock market crash that caused the Great Depression in the 30s. They have no idea what that means. They just know that they have to survive it and try to find work and that kind of thing. And that's how it was for me as a kid, seeing those kind of events happening, with my parents' reaction and neighbors' reactions. I'm not saying, you know, I was around in the 30s, but I'm just saying, the Cuban Missile Crisis. I remember that quite vividly from the early 60s because it was just something that scared the hell out of the grown-ups, so I didn't understand it. So that's the kind of point of view I wanted to, portray in the book.
It's really interesting how you can use massive international trauma in order to sort of as a counterpoint to make the story more intimate and more singular and about characters who are described as being alone in their way, some of them. And it's especially interesting because your work, for better or worse, tends to attract a lot of political commentary and interpretation. I saw you speak at the Brooklyn Book Festival last year, and you said something about not wanting to be forced into the role of the proud flag bearer of Chicano heritage.
I just mentioned that because at the time I was being barraged by those kinds of questions and
this sort of
representing and this and that, and that was never my intention. I've always wanted to just tell people stories. I will emphasize being, you know, Latino, a Mexican American, because that's who I am, and that's, you know, where my eyeballs are coming out of, you know, that a person from that
right.
background,
and
you know, that's really it, you know.
Similarly, you know, you've with Julio's Day, with a few other things, but Julio's Day in particular, you've written really sensitive gay sexual relationships, and I think some readers want to find some deeper meaning or political intentionality in that.
One of the reasons is simply it's just completely natural. I've had gay friends since I was a young, you know, a kid, and before the, you know, I knew about anything about the sexual aspects of it. You know, they were like, a lot of the boys were very sensitive, didn't care to play sports, that kind of thing. You know, pretty much cliched stuff, but they were my close friends, and I saw how they were treated and how they felt about things. They're very self-conscious, you know, introspective, and they spoke more about their feelings than other guys did, you know. So that was the beginning of that. And then growing up and then having openly gay friends in high school, it just, I didn't know, luckily I didn't get any bad advice from adults that would have changed my mind. You know, wrong-headed advice. I was simply left alone with all that and came up with my own conclusions. So when it comes to doing that in comics, I see how, you know, so many people are still afraid of the question. So, you know, I got a chip on my shoulder, so I like to shove it in people's faces. My point of view.
Very common emotional state of a lot of your characters in Palomar and elsewhere is this yearning to leave home and leave behind their past, and it often, in both cases, results in sort of anguished failure to do so. But also, with Julio's Day, there's a counterpoint with Julio's own kind of unwillingness to participate fully in his life or test his own boundaries. So there really seems to be no easy answer about whether to stay home or whether to fly the coop. And I wondered what it means to you to tell that kind of story about characters frequently.
I simply see that in people. Some people are just keep it bottled up inside, and they refuse to open up to their real feelings, just because some, for whatever childhood traumas, you know, they've endured, they learn to survive that way. It's usually a survival thing. And then there's others who just break through it, and that's why I have the two Julios. I have the old, you know, the original Julio in the story, and he's all bottled up and in self-denial constantly, and then I have his great-great-nephew, I think great-great-nephew or something, and he's happy because he's living in the modern world, and but Julio never adapts to the modern world. I just wanted to show the contrast that there's two kinds of ways to be, and the latter is the better one, the youthful acceptance of oneself.
So a lot of these situations come directly from observed, organic social experience. And I think you're, you know, correctly hailed as being really terrific at that and having a lot to offer as that kind of storyteller. Why do you think it is that you can't keep yourself from writing in characters with holes in their heads and blue worm poisoning?
Well, yeah, that's just an aspect of my, my personality, I guess. It's always fascinated me. And, sometimes it gets in the way of stories. And in this one, it's in there a little bit, but... And when I'm doing that sort of thing in a story, I'm never sure, particularly in Julio's Day, if that's going to work. You know, I don't know if it's going to work, you know, but I go with it anyway because that's how it feels right to do it in the story, and it reads right. And, it's obviously an exaggeration. A guy gets blue worm poisoning, he turns into a blimp, and he's a monster for a few seconds. There are such things that happen to people. They get, you see old medical journals and stuff, and you see horrible things that happen to people in the past, sort of things like that. I am fascinated with the physical eccentricities, I guess you can call them, in people. I try to keep it at a minimum when I'm trying to tell a, straightforward story, though, with say, like Julio's Day. But when I'm doing a different type of story, more genre piece like crime or horror, I like to, or even melodrama, just melodrama, I like to exaggerate those to crazy proportions, obviously.
I was actually really hoping to ask you about that, so I'm glad you brought it up. A facet of your recent work that keeps you tied to Palomar without being really bound by its core narrative is you released a series of graphic novels, Love from the Shadows, Chance in Hell, The Troublemakers, probably missing some, that appear to the uninitiated to be genre pieces. They're thrillers or horror stories or kind of a noir thing. But what is actually happening is they literally depict exactly what you would see in these imaginary movies starring your character Fritz, and they sort of resemble like late period Roger Corman sci-fi movies or sleazy 70s Italian thrillers, and I'm really interested in what your film influences are for comics.
Well, it's across the board. I mean, I hold serious, well-made movies the highest, but there is the little rascal in me that likes to see the B movie, the kind of movies you're talking about, the sleaze merchants, because it's just something it's, even as a kid, it just struck me as, well, most kids were just dismissing them as just silly, poorly made films or whatever. I saw them as this fascinating angle on the world, like a tweaked version. It's the way a lot of comic books were at the time, like especially horror comics or whatever. It just, the grotesque aspect of those films was always fascinating to me, and even though I do a lot of that in some of my comics, I try to interject a human element within the proceedings, and I think that gets me in trouble sometimes because somebody might want to read it for the human part, and then there's so much mayhem going on that it's sort of the contradiction just doesn't work for them. So I just have an interest in it. I don't know why. I don't know why it's the lurid aspect of it, but which I enjoy.
Your approach to them as actual movies is so interesting. I read you in other interviews talking about how you've drawn in wardrobe malfunctions and bad makeup and obviously cheap props without just telling it as a straight horror or sci-fi story, but also without ever showing the director or crew. They're really beguiling, and I have a hard time thinking of anybody who's pulling that trick.
Yeah, I try to do, if let's say I am drawing a story that's where a film is being made, I avoid using the lighting and the director and the camera and the crew on purpose, just to give it a flow in the story. It's like, what are we watching? Are we watching a movie, or are we seeing real life? I just have to be careful and to separate those kinds of stories. Because if I'm trying to tell a serious story about people like Julio's Day, I want to refrain from that sort of thing, you know. But when I'm doing a different kind of story, like especially the Fritz books, it's because I want to get the reader into a world that's like, is this real? Is this not real? Should I be reading this? You know, but still being entertained the whole time. You know, it's basically a Jekyll and Hyde situation. Julio's Day and my upcoming Marvel season are my Dr. Jekyll comics, and Mr. Hyde does the Fritz books.
Mm. Well, while I'm saying pandering things about how original your work is, you know, even the biggest indie firebrands, like a guy like Gary Panter, shows the visual influence of classic comics artists like Ditko and Kirby and people who are, you know, tremendously creative but come from a more conservative background. And it seems to me, lately, I'm seeing more and more influence of Charles Schulz in Indian art comics. But your style seems totally your own to me. I have a really hard time relating it to outside influences, and especially in Julio's Day, the book is so distinguished by environmental and atmospheric effects. I mean, there are storm clouds in the book that are as moving as any human face, and I just wondered if you could cite any artistic influences for that sort of thing.
It's just looking out the window, really. I mean, how did you feel when you were 10 years old looking at a storm cloud? You know, that kind of thing. I do draw a lot from childhood impressions, even when I'm telling an adult story or a story about adults. I don't look at it. I don't know how an adult looks at storm clouds. I only know what a 10-year-old looks like. That's me. I'm a 10-year-old looking at storm clouds, you know. The adult in me just says, oh, it's going to rain, you know, wear a jacket or, you know, whatever, drive carefully, whatever, that kind of thing. Or are we going to be able to get from point A to B because it's going to rain? But the 10-year-old in me looks at it like, that looks like aliens coming, or that looks like, you know, that looks like bad luck, or whatever a kid responds to, you know, especially if you know, hear thunder and see lightning, it's like, oh, wow, that was cosmic or whatever. So a lot of times I'm looking at natural phenomenon from a child's point of view. And that can get me into trouble, because if I want to tell an adult story, I want to refrain from that sometimes, because sometimes that creeps into the adult's characters' lives. And, you know, when I tell stories about adults, for the most part, I try to keep it within the adult realm.
Well, I'd like to just ask one geeky, insidery question. I want to know if there's any chance that we'll see the Palomar character Israel again, especially in relation to Jaime's character Izzy Ortiz.
Oh, that was just a gag for me. We were always pulling gags like that in the first run of Love and Rockets, the magazine. And I had an ending because I wanted to finish Palomar for the run of the first Love and Rockets Volume 1. And it was actually just a generic character. I didn't really have anybody in mind. And I just kept playing with different ideas, and I thought, well, what the hell, we're ending the book. We don't know if we're going to do this anymore, so I just asked Time if I could use Izzy at the end of it, just to give it that kind of tease at the end of the series. And my drawing of Izzy didn't come out too well. I tried and tried, it just didn't look like her. It looked like a generic character. So I asked Time to do the drawing, and that's his drawing of Izzy and Palomar. The only time we've had our characters, I think. Mixing that way, at least in Palomar, that I remember. We could have done it before, but I don't remember. It's been 30 years, so I've gotten a lot of this stuff. It's interesting that you're bringing up stuff.
There are people out there like me that never forgot it.
The only time I look at my old stuff is just out of reference. Like, oh, did Luba already do this? Did she already say this?
Mm.
This character, you go through this. That's pretty much what I'm looking back at my old stuff for. But normally I like to go forward. As far as is showing Israel again, that's possible. I'm opening up the book to those kinds of stories, Ian.
Cool. Think about it. Think hard. Is there any new comics from other people that you're reading? Or old comics from other people that you're rediscovering?
For the most part, lately I haven't been looking at too many new things, just because the comics I like come out every, you know, 3 or 4 years. Like books like Charles Burns or Dan Klaus. Richard Sala, those are my favorites, and they come out very infrequently, so I don't really see a lot. But part of the reason is also I'm not looking at too much new things now is because 24 hours a day I am either writing or thinking about writing these days. So I'm really not looking at new things unless somebody shows me, hey, is this a new comic yet? Look at it. You know, I don't go sniffing around for new things. Like I said, just at this moment right now. So I couldn't really tell you about new things. I mean, I still look at old reprints and old books I have.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to say to fans or critics that we didn't touch upon?
No, other than I'm really happy that Julio's Day's coming out, and also Marble Season, because it's actually the two more straightforward things I've done in a long time for readers of any persuasion, anybody who cares about reading a good story, hopefully. I haven't really done that, because I know some of the other stuff I've done recently, like the Fritz books, it aren't for everybody, but Julio's Day is for any adult that can read, that still knows how to read. And Marble Season will be it's an all ages book for everybody.
All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us again. And I don't know, I've got to tell everybody who hasn't to read Julio's Day and keep an eye peeled for Marble Season.
Thank you.
This is like the litmus test that I give for books that are like really excellent. My wife is now interested, and she doesn't read comics, and she's at home downloading it on her iPad. So she's gonna be reading it. So I'm excited to hear what she thought.
Oh, great, great! Oh, I really hope she likes it.